This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the second episode of the Football Drop Podcast this week. We've got an absolute banger for you this week. I don't really know how we've managed to get this guest on. We have a director of football. Yeah, exactly. This is what I mean. How have we got this person on? No, this is an absolute cracker of an episode. So, yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll let him introduce himself now.
So we've got Jerry with us. Jerry, would you mind just introducing yourself a little bit about who you are, what you're doing at the minute, and what sort of where you come into in terms of the footballing world?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having us. My name is Jerry Strain. I'm the director of football for Hamilton Academical Football Club. Just now we're the 11th oldest club in Scotland. That's assuming no others go bust. we're a full-time club, but we're currently performing in League One, which is the third tier of Scottish football. We have to retain our full-time status because we've got an elite youth academy. Our youth this year participated in the Champions League.
Fantastic.
So it's quite ironic that we're a third tier outfit at the full-time piece, but our kids are performing up there with Molde. We played the Norwegian champions.
Okay.
We played them a few weeks ago.
How'd you get on?
We lost 3-0 over in Molde. It was a great experience. And then we beat them 4-1 at home.
Oh, wow.
So we... No, wait a minute. 4-2, sorry, 4-2 at home. So we lost out 5-1 goal difference.
Oh, got in.
Which, it was sickening because, genuinely, if I could show you footage in the game, they're men, you know, they're well-conditioned, big physical Vikings, you know. And we're just... We gadgets to Glasgow, and that's no disrespect to my team, you know, but we're just a really good football outfit, but a lot of young kids with a 14-year-old playing, a 15-year-old playing, sorry. Whereas Molde have got guys that are playing, you know, playing and in and around the first team. In addition to that, we actually sold 4 of our players to the English Premier League and Championship over the summer. So 4 of the kids who got us the league victory are now plying a trade down south, giving them pathways into the big ticket, if you like. One of the lads made his Premier League debut last week against Arsenal.
Who was that guy?
For Sheffield United, Ryan Oney.
Okay.
Yeah.
He came on in the 83rd minute of the game at the Emirates. So only 6 weeks ago he was playing football in Scottish League One against Kelty.
Wow.
Coming off the bench, and now he's playing against Arsenal in the Emirates. So
amazing.
A lot of your viewers probably never heard of Hamilton Accies, or if they have done, they've heard the name and maybe made light of it, or a bit of humour against, you know, a bit of satire attached to the fact that we're a League One club and we've got this big long name. But what we do, particularly at youth level, would we do really, really well. I would say it's unrivaled in the UK for players coming through, getting onto senior pathways, you know. So, and that's, there's a guy called George Cairns, who's academy director. He's been there for 16 years, I think. A guy called Sean Fagan as well. And then all the coaches beneath them.
Mm.
They've created pathways for so many into the game, like James MacArthur, Brian Easton, who was at Burnley, Lewis Ferguson, who's now out in Italy, Scottish internationalist, Ryan Oney, who's in the Premier League just now, several others. So we're a full-time club because we have that part of the club to look after, and that's, we're really proud of that.
Mm.
And the downside of that is a full-time club in League One is a massive drain in your financial resource, because you're paying top wages, but you're performing against teams that are either hybrid or part-time. But hopefully we get to win the league this year, and at least get promotion and get us back to Championship. We have you taking back into the SPL.
Okay. You
know, it's fascinating. You need to come up for a game. You know,
it'd be
great to have you up. I know you probably know Hamilton fans and don't know much about us.
I mean, we'd love to come up, honestly. Like, I don't know if you've listened to a couple of sort of the episodes recently, but we had Richard Crick from Man v Fat on a few weeks ago. And we were saying to him, like, I've never been to an away game in my life. I've always wanted to. Like, I love football, but it's just, you know, it's the time, the money and things like that to be able to go to these games. And we're both Arsenal fans. So to go to an Arsenal away game, it's like gold dust to get a bloody ticket. Like, it's an absolute nightmare. So there's just no way you can realistically go to some of the away games. Like, we go to our local ones and now and then, and if they're playing, you know, reasonably local, we'll try and go to them. I'd love to come up. That'd be amazing. Go up there, good weekend.
I've got a few good contacts at Arsenal, so I can probably sort you out your away tickets.
Oh, Jerry, stop it.
Arsenal's a great club, to be fair. I'm really friendly with a couple of agents who have got, who speak very highly of Arsenal, and they've got great contacts in there, so I can sort that out.
Amazing.
But you get robbed at the weekend, eh?
Oh, don't. Yeah. We haven't even done it. So he's going to do like a double episode this week. So we do a special, obviously, with you and kind of release that as a separate standalone. We normally do like a review of the weekend's games, but I don't think I want to this week, to be honest with you, after that.
You know, how many excuses not to give a goal does a referee and VAR need?
Oh,
you know,
they ignore
every one of them. You know, it's...
Honestly, mate, I'm so glad you've said it like that. Because, I mean, Arsenal have been getting a bit of a bashing over the last 24 hours in terms of...
Yeah.
You know, what Arteta came out and said after the game. And obviously what the club have obviously, you know, secondly come out and said afterwards to back him up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad you said that. So it's not just us thinking the same.
No, that's just an impartial view. You know, I've got, obviously I can't say too much, but because potentially up here, if I say something about Scottish football, you bring the game into disrepute. But
yeah, of course.
I think PAR's not without its challenges, but it's down to, there's this thing that, who sits behind the screens, you know, you might know who they are, but where do their loyalties lie, you know? So if you look at the Spurs and Liverpool game a few weeks back, it's a game changer, you know. Granted, it was a mistake and it was a miscommunication, but that's one of the innocent ones, but it cost dearly, you know. And Liverpool deserve to win, I think, when the balance of play, but
yeah, absolutely. It's those knock-on effects, isn't it? It's, you know, that one event in the game might have, you know, stopped a red card for argument's sake, but what's the knock-on effect of, you know, them being down to 10 men? So there's more space. You know, you're utilising, you know, the right-hand side, left-hand side, or whatever it may be, and it's that constant build-up.
Aye. That all changes. But the Scottish VAR, there's a thing up here about, you know, there's only two teams in Scotland, according to many, is like Celtic and Rangers.
Mm.
You know, if you ask a Celtic fan, they'll tell you that the referees are biased against them, and if you ask Rangers fans, they'll say the same.
Yeah, of course.
Hamilton Accies fans call them both the ugly sisters. It's kind of, and the irony is, it's you would drive by Hamilton Stadium to go to Celtic Park or Ibrox. So we actually, they don't do us any favours commercially, or fan base wise, because people leave that catchment area to travel to Glasgow to watch the both of them. You know, and we could be doing we've only got 6,018 seats in our stadium.
Right. Okay.
Average attendance is about 1,800. Okay. So it's not massive, but you'd think, you know, you'd be able to tap into that that demographic quite easily, but it's no straightforward at all. We had a fireworks event at the stadium last night with one of the charities, and there was 5,500-6,000 people at it.
Oh wow!
So, but we get 1,800 for a game, and it's all from the same community.
Yeah. So how much is a ticket? What's the ticket prices?
Roughly £20. You know, it's the average. I mean, some of the cup games. There was a cup game last week, and it was £12 and £8. The latter stages is normally £20, but I think £20 is probably an average.
Yeah.
Season tickets are really, really cheap in comparative terms to what you pay at the Emirates, you know, and stuff as you'd expect. But it's just this, I think there's an apathy last year because we got relegated. The fans weren't happy, quite rightly so, with where we ended up. But the irony is we've now got more season ticket holders this year than we had last year.
Oh, really?
It's bizarre. So there's a lot of politics going on. A lot of fans were unhappy with the owner last year.
The guy
who owned the club. I get quite nasty at times. It was quite, it's kind of vitriolic. I experienced that myself, I still do.
Joe, I was going to ask. So, you know, just that you said it, because obviously, you know, what the whole Man United thing at the moment, as an example, obviously the Glazers get bashed week in, week, like daily at the moment. And like from your perspective, you know, people blame the owners, they blame the directors of football. You know, it's you head guys that will always bear the brunt of it. Obviously, managers as well. How do you deal with that? And like, what's it like dealing with that on a day to day?
I'll give you like, hopefully two or three answers here that culminate in the one. So, personally, for me, it doesn't bother me. It's war over duck's back.
Mm.
Do you know? So
fair enough.
Yeah, I'm used to being called a fat bastard or an arse. But
I'm used to that, and that's from Will.
So that doesn't bother me. It's honestly, it's par for the course, because ultimately, the people around about me, my subordinates and my superiors, will judge how good or bad I am at my job. And that's no disrespect to any fans. Everybody's got an opinion. I keep saying this, I've said it so many times. Everyone's got an opinion, they're entitled to it. And everyone's opinion's right, but there are only so many opinions that matter.
Yeah.
And that's a bit that, see, if you just kind of keep reminding yourself and reassuring yourself of that state of fact. So the opinions that matter in a football club, in my opinion, we've got a manager, John Rankin, who is one of the best coaches in Scotland. And he'll go on to bigger and better things, whether it's through us or whether it's through a different route, but he'll become one of the best managers in the UK, I'm sure. And that's not me kind of blowing smoke up his backside. That's, you look at how hard he works and how thorough he is and how respected he is, and then take away who he is as a person from that. He's just a right good man. When he's great with people, and that's like, he's a perfect package for what you'd want in a modern day coach. So in my opinion, he's a guy that's employed to be the football brains. It's not me, it's not the owners, it's not the chairman, it's not the other directors, it's John and John's assistant, Darren McKinnon, who played at the top of Scottish football for a decade. You know, and he was one of the most feared centre midfielders that you come up against. People hated playing him. So they're the two guys in their dugout. They know what they're talking about, and what they're doing now is they're giving our team an identity we never had before. You know, when Hamilton won the Premier League before, if someone, you know, if you asked, you know, what you expected to play against, it was, you weren't looking forward to it. It was a horrible game. They were in your face. It's a plastic pitch. It was nasty. Now we're playing fast attacking football, when we're creating, I checked the stats today, actually, not because of this, but something else. Apart from Celtic and Falkirk, we create the most opportunities per game in Scottish football.
Wow, that's a feat.
That's a feat. Now, Falkirk are top of our league. So obviously we need to address that. You know, we need to get ahead of that.
Yeah.
The top of our league be 3 points now and 4 goals on us, I think it is. But therein lies a story in itself. You know, that two teams in League One who are going toe-to-toe with each other are creating more chances than Rangers, Hearts, Aberdeen, Hibs per match. So that reaffirms for me that the guys who have got the opinions on the football side have got the right opinions, because eventually these chances will come to fruition. You know, it's it's our job to put the right players in place to make sure that the philosophy they've got is delivered. So that's one side. The other side is my kids are exposed to some of the abuse that I've had. Do you know, so I had a kind of personal ding-dong with some fans, unfortunately, and the club was going through a right bad time in January. A lot of it was nonsense. You know, it was a lot of nonsense, but, you know, there's that fight or flight thing, and I've never been a fast runner. So I've only really got one option, you know.
Yeah. Revert back to what you know best.
It's part of who you are when you grow up. You grow up in a scheme or an estate. You know, you stay true to your convictions and your beliefs. And so my son's exposed to stuff, and my family, my wife, is exposed to some stuff. That's not nice to see. But again, I just need to say to them, look, just ignore it. It's somebody who doesn't know me's opinion of me. Just ignore it and turn off. But they take it more personally because it's their dad or husband or whatever. My wife probably agrees most of it, to be fair. She's probably doing it herself. You know? But that bit of it is not nice. Again, it doesn't bother me, but it's because I'm trying to teach my son, you need to get used to this anyway, because as you grow up, you're going to have to deal with other scenarios similar. But then I question, you know, well, who would do that and why?
Yeah.
I don't have time to sit at a computer and lambast people or you know, call people out. I don't have time for it. You know, I'm busy in my life. I've got quite a good, happy life, quite a balanced life. So I then take stock and think, ah, well, you know, it could be worse. I could be sitting behind the keyboard having to slag someone off.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so, and then the other side of it is you've got the club. So you've got, last year, the owner of the club, a guy called Colin McGowan, who sold it this year, he was putting six figures, quite hefty six figures, in to keep the club alive.
Oh, wow.
You know, but he was the main focal point of the abuse, because Colin never understood football. He openly admits it himself. He never dealt with the football stuff.
Right.
He had a board to do that for him.
Yeah.
And a board of people who he thought were football experts that would deliver that side of the business, and he can go and focus on the money side. But the gap between the fans and the club just became massive. And I never, when I get involved with them, I tried to buy the club initially. That was how I became involved with them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I never appreciated that the gap in the bridge between the club and the fans was so huge. Mm. You know, I will get a few wins and it'll be fine. And I completely underestimated that. It was like naivety at its best. I would even go as far as saying there was a hatred there.
Wow.
Between a section of the fans and some within the club. And purely by default, I became part of that club. I was on the same side as the guy that they hated.
Right, okay.
So by default, you then took the flak because of that?
I took a bit of flak because of that, and also because I was quite vocal with things that I didn't think were right. You know, okay. I don't think that just because you're a fan and because you care and because you spend 20 quid a week going to see a club, I think there's a line over the abuse that people get. And at this time, I wasn't getting the abuse, to be fair. It was other people within a club, but the irony was, I found that more hurtful than me being abused.
Yeah.
I can't get around that. I need to go and do a study myself to see.
Well, I suppose they're your guys.
No. I found that quite hurtful because I'm watching what these people are going through day on day within a club as small as Hamilton to try and keep the heels in the bus. And I'm seeing what they're doing, legitimately doing. But that was never conveyed to the fans. The communication wasn't great. It wasn't good enough, you know, for a professional football club outwardly. I had an issue with that. I think we let ourselves down communicating. The communication as a board wasn't good enough. You know, we never knew. We turned up for a game one night and there's a new guy in the pitch and we're like, who's this? Oh, I see.
My God. So
there was like, now, if we're dealing with that as a board, think how the manager feels and think how the fans feel.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's an interesting point because we were talking about the owner of Sheffield Wednesday last week, I think it was, and what he's been saying. And it was almost like you can kind of understand where he's coming from with the abuse that his family's getting. But has he taken that too far?
I can't speak for him. I know, but to be fair to our fans, you know, the loyal fans, there's not that many of them, and they are loyal, you know, and they do care about their club. And all they want to know is that the club that was founded in 1874 is going to survive another 100 years, and no doubt Rangers are an Airdrie game.
Yeah, of course.
So they just want to know their club's safe, secure, and they can continue to watch it. It's the real fans. Do you know, if you look at a Celtic or a Rangers, particularly in Scotland, I would imagine if you go a number of years without success, the fans will disappear. You know, but then you get the ones that, I think Celtic, going through the, they're chasing that 9-in-a-row season. They have had an empty, well, 3/4 of a stadium full because they couldn't fill the seats. It was only Brendan Rodgers coming in. So all these people come from nowhere, but at Hamilton, we don't have that. We've got a nucleus and a core who go everywhere. Mm. And then at home, there's a nucleus and a core that's part of the life. And I don't think that was respected in a correct fashion by the club. That's my opinion.
Okay.
I don't think it was. I don't think the club willingly went out their way to disengage. But it was almost as though this rift just seemed to build and build and build. And it got to a stage that it was untenable. You know, and that was probably the stage that I'd come in, not realising what was there in front of me.
Yeah.
And then I was starting to kind of speak factually about things, and it just was not being accepted. You know, it wasn't. I was using stats to back up what I was trying to convey, and the stats were similar to the 300 season ticket holders. There's clubs in like the 7th or 8th tier of Scottish football who've got that. You know, so the comparison I was making was, by default, if we're basing it on here, we're a club at the lower regions of the Scottish pyramid system. You know, but that's not what fans want to hear, but I'm just being honest, because for the expectations and ambitions we've got, we need to find money from somewhere to help us get there. Mm. You know, because we can't hold on to players, we can sell them. They're not with us to play 20 years at Hamilton Accies. They're with us to try and get a pathway into the Premier League or the SPL or go abroad.
Yeah.
So our duty of care to them is to sell them. And then the club make money and the money goes back in and we just recycle and recycle. So we have to find money for somewhere, and it's approximately £2 million a year is what it costs to run the club. So it's a challenge when you try and convey that to fans. To be fair to them, it's not their problem.
They're paying, you know, football's an entertainment game, isn't it, at the end of the day. Mm. You know, it's
funny, we let a game last year, we were dreadful. that wasn't the manager's fault, that was our fault. It was a club for not supporting the manager correctly, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, I think as a club, if we sit back and take stock on it and speak openly and honestly, I may be shot down for this. I think that we let our fans down and we let our manager down. Because John Rankin coming into that job, that was his first kind of major gig, you know, at that level.
Yeah.
Darren McKinnon coming back to the club was and is a club legend.
Mm.
And we're responsible for playing with their reputations. So that's the reality of it. You know, that's maybe a... Other directors watching this will say that guy's a bit soft or whatever, but it's no soft.
Honest.
No, I was going to say it's refreshingly honest, that, because you don't hear, like the Sheffield Wednesday, and just going back to him for a sec, you don't hear, you know, owners, directors of football, whatever, at that top level being that honest and open with the fans. Like, it's they know what's going on.
Because see, at the end of the day, you may not agree with the fans' opinion, like I said earlier. You may not agree with their version of how football should be played, but they're not daft. They're watching the same as you're watching.
Mm.
They might miss some of the nuanced stuff that, you know, why you do certain things. You know, like, I think last year we heard something about the left winger with a winger, and excuse my language, but who the fuck does he think he is, going over to that corner, taking his time like that, playing keepy uppy? Right, but the keepy uppy was a signal for the move we were going to play for that set piece.
Okay.
Right, so, but this is stuff that fans won't hear, that fans won't know that, because you're not going to share that intelligence.
No, of course.
Right? But so there's certain things that are finely nuanced within a game that might look out of the ordinary, that might look like something that it's not, but the perception is that you're 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go, you need a goal, and then your winger's going to play and keep you up with the ball, taking his time into the corner flag. He's doing that because he's passing out a message and a signal that you're hoping to convey to your other teammates without spelling it out. You know, but there's wee things like that. So if we're doing that at our level, you can imagine what Man City and Tottenham and Arsenal and Liverpool are doing.
At their level,
you know, they probably get grommets in their ears, you know.
Implants and all sorts.
So there's, I mean, there's that, but I'm glad that you've taken that as being honest, because that's my job. I mean, there's certain things that you just don't discuss because it's for the privilege of board level only or whatever, but when it comes to watching the game as a spectacle and you're saying it's an entertainment game, you have to be honest, because we're all watching the same thing, you know, and we're all expecting the same outcome. So I don't have an issue being honest. I'd rather be honest and go to sleep at night than sit and blow smoke up people's asses and be laughed at in the way out the door because they made a mess, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's also at the end of the day, they're paying to watch the team play. So there's a slight sense of they're entitled to their opinion. They are, you know, paying the bills to a certain, or contributing to the bills.
Everyone is, it goes back to what we said at the start, everyone's got an opinion and entitled to it, but the opinions that really matter at that moment in time, because everything's just a moment in time, it's only temporary. But the opinions that matter at that time are the guy that's picking the team and his assistant who's assisting him. You know, and then the analyst or the sports scientist, whoever's given a bit of input about he's fit, he's not fit, or whatever. You know, they're the opinions that matter. It's what I think about it doesn't matter a damn. You know, I'll speak to our manager before, during, and after every game, and it'll be a conversation. You know, and he might take something that I've said to him and think, actually, I never thought of that, and he'll go and check it out himself, because that's what a good manager would do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why does Jerry think that? Is it because he's talking about, or has he spotted something that we've missed in the heat at the moment? But it's up to him what he does with that feedback. So my job's not to help him put a team in the park and then pick his stack. My job's to get the players that he needs to deliver his vision of football.
So what is your job on a day-to-day then? What would you say you do?
Also, how long have we got?
I probably make a mess and more than I do right. I've got the role at the football club, which is a far bigger role than expected. I've got my own business as well, out with that. But the football piece is taking up a lot of time. My role would involve, well, what it involved this summer. So I took over the role on the 1st of June. We got a new owner, Serif Zengin, a Turkish chap. He's different class. You know, if you think I'm honest, you want to get Serif on your show.
All right, Jerry, we'll get you to get him on for next week, if that's all right then, mate.
No, he's a great guy. He's a great guy, he's an honest guy, and he's driven. You know, he's driven, he's very determined, and he's a winner. So all those boxes, I completely respect him, and that's, you know, run through brick walls for him, same as our manager, do the same for him. So he asked me to do a certain thing role-wise within the club for the 1st of June, and that basically involved getting players into the club because we didn't have any. The way the contracts in Scotland work, they're slightly different to the English FA. Your contracts generally come to an end on the 31st of May.
Right.
Whereas down south, it's maybe the first or second week in June that the contracts come to an end. So on the 1st of June this year, we had, I think it's 7 signed players. And pre-season was the 25th of June or something, I think it was, or something like that.
Wow.
So we didn't have a team, we never had a squad. And bearing in mind we'd just been relegated, we had to quickly put together a squad that we hope would win the league and allow, you know, sustain us to get back to the SPL in 2 years. So initially it was like a 2-year plan, a 2-year vision that we thought we could try and come up with. So we quickly pulled together the analysis, the players that we wanted, and it was head down, backside up for 3 weeks to get the players in. And we've done it, I think I've brought in 16 players so far, all of which belong to us, with the exception of one who's on loan.
Okay.
Whereas last year we had a number of loans from Newcastle, Stoke, Fulham and the likes.
Okay.
And
that's quite a significant change, isn't it, to go from loaning those sort of players into then investing in the club like that.
Yeah, it's more than significant. I mean, it was. We've now got a squad of assets. you know, that are worth, you know, I say, depending on where you look, transfer room or transfer market or whatever, I think transfer room for squads worth about 5 million in total, which you think England, it's comparative terms, it's, I mean, the kid we sold to Sheffield United was sold for like 200-300 grand. He's made his Premier League debut, so he's done, God knows, he's worth now purely because he's played, right? But, you know, so, but the value on transfer room's 5 million, the value on a transfer market, I think it's about four and a half or four. Depends where you look, but they're our players. Wow. We own them. And what we did was we gave them a 2-year contract as well. So, okay. Or most of them get a 2-year contract. We were confident that these guys were good enough to take us through one or two levels. Mm-hmm. And we just need to add to that. And then hopefully we give ourselves a fighting chance of at least surviving in the next league if we get promoted. But the change in that structure was significant. What it also means is the players are committed to the club. So no disrespect to a loan player, but we had kids going back to Fulham and Newcastle, and they knew they were going back. Whether they were not.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not saying they weren't invested, but they're going to go back to get a wage for another 2 or 3 years. It doesn't really matter. Whereas these guys we've got now, they're buying into the club, they're buying into John's message, they're buying into we're playing football.
Yeah.
And hopefully they've got a good relationship with the fans that carries us through, you know, the campaign and next. So that was my role, was to put that in place, get the players in the building, and then support John in whatever ways I had to. And then I had to put in place an analyst department.
Okay.
So we already had a first team analyst, Declan McKean, different class. He came from Bristol City, a great guy. So he's come in, and he's now got a team of scouts covering the whole of Scotland and Ireland. Sorry, whole of UK and Ireland. Wow. So we take in, I think it's 47 games a week we take in.
My God.
As a club. So for a League One outfit, we're operating at a Premier League level from a scouting and intelligence capacity now. Whether or not we can afford to get those players in is another thing. But what we will do is we'll find a gem in a National League, for example, who would be happy to come up, ply his trade, maybe get a move. Mm-hmm. And we'll find a couple of gems in Ireland whose league finished on Friday last week, and the playoffs are this week.
Right.
There'll be a few games over there. And hopefully through that scouting coverage, we've now got visibility of players that we never had before. That infrastructure in place, and that's down to Declan. Granted, I've given him a bit of assistance with here's what we need and here's how we do it.
Mm.
Declan's going to put that in place and spends a massive amount of time on it. And then the medical department, we brought that in-house as well. So we hired a head of medical, and then we've got a couple of assistant physios.
Brilliant.
We've got a sports science piece, some full-time guys in there and some interns from Ireland.
So sorry, was that outsourced previously then, Jerry, do you say? You've just brought it in-house this season?
Yeah, the physio piece was outsourced. There's pros and cons to that, you know. I don't think it worked as well last season as it could have for whatever reason. You know, I wasn't directly involved in it.
Right.
But I think with it being in-house, you've got a lot more control. Mm-hmm. The guys who were involved last year, really competent in the field. But I think through knowing football, players are kind of creatures of habit.
Mm.
And they want things to be in-house, and they need mollycoddle, they need loved, and they need attention, you know.
Yeah.
Some guys moan if the peg's not properly, you know, and you need to, it's a changed game for, you know, for what it was, but so the more that's in-house, the better, because if you ask any senior pro yourself, they'll always say they'll try and find excuses, you know, the food's not good,
yeah,
my boots are not right, there's always an excuse, so your job really is to mitigate that risk, and the only way to do that is to control it, you know.
Yeah.
And so we've now got the medical piece in-house, we've got the analysis piece, sports science piece, and then John with the football piece is all in-house. And then the academy sits just kind of parallel with that. So it's a massive, massive operation for such a small.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry, Will, just to interject quickly. I was scrolling through, I wasn't being rude. I was trying to find your post that you posted just as the season started on LinkedIn. Because there was a post and you listed about 412 different things that you'd actioned over like 13 weeks of the summer.
Yeah, that's right.
Aye. I was just trying to, honestly, like, you obviously you're very active on LinkedIn, so I couldn't find it, but there was so much on there. You've been doing some academy stuff, obviously, you know, finding the first team. You're doing some pitch improvements, I think, or something like that before, or training improvements.
Yep.
Like, how do you get the time?
To be fair, it was that was a challenging time. That was challenging. That was about a 6 week period where it was just like shoulder to the wheel. It was tough, and my business had to suffer during that period.
Mm.
You know, so basically, I had no focus whatsoever on my own business, away from it was 100% attention to football stuff. My family life suffered as well because I wasn't putting the time and effort in that should have been at home. It was just football, football, football. But the reason for that, and the God's honest truth behind that, was I think we let our manager down that badly last year as a club,
right,
that I wasn't prepared to go into the position I'm in, and allow him to be let down again. So there was an emotional driver behind that. It wasn't just about it's not about me. It's about almost protecting, look, you don't deserve what you experienced last year. I'm going to put my full weight behind, there's plenty of weight on me, I'm going to put my full weight behind making sure that you've got as good a chance as you have. The rest of it's down to you. So I had to get it right, and I had to put the time and effort and the commitment into it. I couldn't do it half-hearted. And I wanted to make sure that I took as much of the pressure away from John as I possibly could so that he could focus on what he's amazing at. You know, that was my goal, that was my personal objective, and that was my driver. And I spoke about that at home, I spoke about it in here to my staff. My objective was, I know that we've got an amazing manager who's an amazing guy as a human being.
Mm.
He's fundamentally a good guy, fundamentally. And on top of that, he's very, very good at what he does, and he's got a lot of progress that we make. But we were hindering that progress, and I thought that we played his reputation a bit, and I didn't think it was right. And at a personal level, that I struggled with that. So I wasn't going to let that happen again. And I had the backing of the owner who put me into this role, so I didn't want to let him down either.
Mm.
And because he's trusting me with the keys to his baby, you know, it's like he's just bought this club. If I go and bring in drivel that's no good enough for the job, it's going to reflect badly on him as well. So the pressure I put myself under was pretty immense, but it was for well-founded reasons.
Mm.
It was for really well-founded reasons. It was to try and serve and protect John, and to serve and protect the guy that's bought the club.
Yeah.
And it was a privileged position to be in. You know, a great learning curve. I probably made, I don't know how many mistakes I made, you know, because of the amount of activity I was doing. The amount of mistakes are probably through the roof, and I've not found them yet.
But you've got to learn from that, though, don't you? Exactly.
I will learn from it. I don't mind learning from it. But what I do know is that I kind of cleared the way for John to do his bit. And we only lost the first game competitively this season on Saturday. So we're unbeaten from July all the way through to Saturday there. So that kind of tells me that was the right thing to do, and John's the right guy to do what he does.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that's what it was, but it was a significant workload. I'd probably do it in a more smarter fashion if the same thing came round again. I'd be more clever, but there was only me.
Mm.
The infrastructure wasn't there. The owner of the club was in Turkey because he was going through the acquisition. A lot of the stuff had to be kept confidential because obviously there's a change and changing ownership and stuff, and so there was I was literally flying solo. The owner of the club previously helped me massively, you know, with a bit of advice and a bit of guidance. He helped me massively just deal with it,
right?
But time wise it was a 24 hour job for about 6 weeks. But do you know, it was what a way to learn, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I didn't.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Their manager's done me a favour, because if he was hopeless and we started this season shit, I'd have been out of job doing
it. Yeah, the pressure's on then. You get a few more fans, you know, shouting a few abusive terms at you, for sure.
But couldn't get any worse, mate. So that wasn't bothering me. But no, that's the reasons for it. It was significant, and I was involved in stuff that a director of football shouldn't have to be involved in.
Yeah,
but it needed doing. Things like buying socks for the players turning up.
Really?
For the first day of pre-season. You know, it's things you can think about. You know, but we, because there's a change of kit supplier and we're waiting a kit coming, you've got all these new players coming in. Some from Premier League clubs in Scotland, and there's no training socks, just wee things.
You know,
supply of water, supply of towels, and just things that you take for granted. So there was stuff I was getting involved in that was time consuming, that was none of my business and none of my role, but it needed doing. And it was, you know, it was a learning curve. It was good for me. Put stickers in my chest and take them off my head.
Yeah, it sounds like there's that passion from you and that love of the club. So you're now, and it's working, because like you say, you've lost one game now, 3 points off top place. So I assume it's all, you're doing all of this for that to then gain promotion and get to the SPL, I assume.
Aye, well, but again, it goes back to, it's not the job I do. The job I do is like one cog in a massive wheel.
Yeah.
The real work is done by John, Darren, and whoever they've got on the training field.
Mm.
Because if that part doesn't work, it doesn't matter what I do. I can't affect what happens in the park. I'm not qualified to. I mean, we had a conversation today, myself, the chairman, and the owner of the club, and we had a conversation about the game on Saturday. You know, we lost 1-0. Should be a loss, should be not. What could we have done better? All this kind of stuff. And at one stage, I'd said to both the guys, look, we're due respect. There's three of us here sitting having a conversation with the benefit of hindsight, and not one of us has got a qualification in football.
When you put it so simply, that's mad. It's absolutely mad.
Yeah. But that's the reality, and that's probably the reality in 95% of boardrooms across football.
Yeah.
So, but it was one of those ones that I'm sitting saying, right, I know we're disappointed we get beat. I know that we need to win the league. I know that it's put pressure on us. But we created 15 chances. The other team created 4 or 5.
Mm.
I know you can't live your life in stats, but eventually the stats will come good.
Yeah.
If we created 2 chances, then fine, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
We've still created another 15 chances in a game that we never played well.
Yes.
You could argue half the team never turned up, we created 15 chances. So it was at that stage, it's how can I communicate effectively with my board? and put it in layman's terms, that, you know, we pay him because he's the expert.
Yeah, exactly.
We're here because it's your job to bring money at the club and to make sure that we can prosper and grow. So it's good to maybe, if you can, keep that in mind. I know the emotion gets in the way and stuff, but sometimes the reality checks is good. You know, it's, if any of us were managers, we'd be sitting in a dugout and we'd be, you know, what would we have done differently?
Yeah.
You know, it's mad. You get caught up in the moment. So
fascinating. Yeah, it's genuinely fascinating. Like the insight I'm getting here, it's blowing my mind. I love this.
Yeah.
But I'd imagine if you go to, you mentioned the Glazers, I mean, what do they know about football? I don't know, because I don't know much about them, but I wouldn't have thought they were as much as Ten Hag. You know?
Yeah.
Do you know, how do they make players do what they want them to do?
Yeah, exactly. They don't, and we're seeing the ripple effect that's kind of has on the clubs, doesn't it? When you either don't let your manager manage, or you've got like that sort of background noise rumbling on.
Well, it must filter through. I think I don't think for a minute that our manager last year was told what to do by anyone. I couldn't tell you if that's the case or not, but I don't think that's the case, because I reckon he probably walked if that was the case. He's quite a strong enough character, but. Mm. What I do know is that the ripple effects from off the field certainly affected on the field, both commercially because there wasn't enough money, and then just through a general satisfaction coming to your work. You've seen it, that people were turning up last year and doing a job and going. Whereas right. You go into stadium just now, people don't want to leave. Do you know, even I hate going in because I know I've got other stuff to do. So I actually hate going in because I get caught up in this. It's just a good place to be, and the people are in it are great, and they're honest people.
I
had a run-in with the assistant manager after my first game. We drew with Cove, the team that beat us the weekend, and I'd walked in and I'd said to him, what the hell happened there? And he said to me, oh, we need a box-to-box midfielder. And I replied to him in a fashion that he didn't appreciate, and the two of you ended up kind of, you know, it was very, very, very close to to run about together, you know. but there's an honesty there that, you know, and that night we're in a conversation on the phone, you know, and it's done, dusted, and I completely respect his passion, his honesty.
Yeah.
You know, and now we get to today, we lost a game at the weekend, and I was sitting thinking, shit, see if he'd a box to box midfielder.
But I suppose, you know, the longer you work with people, you build up that working relationship, you know how each other work a bit more, and obviously you learn more about each other from a personal level as well. So eventually you can have these conversations, even in the heat at the moment. Obviously the passion in football is just, I think, is unmatched really in anything else. So that's always going to flare to the top, isn't it?
I think that was a bad one, because I felt under pressure because I was responsible for bringing the players into the club and we needed to go off to a good start.
Yeah.
So I probably allowed that pressure to get to me. And then Darien was allowing the pressure to get to him because he's responsible for what happens in the park.
Mm.
And we drew a game we should never have drawn. So I think it was just like it was a perfect ingredient for a blow up, you know, and you probably get two of the wrong guys.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know. So it was only going to go one way, you know. But you know, what a great, honest, passionate guy. You know, so because you'd rather have that in your dressing room and your coaching staff than somebody that doesn't care, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
But it's fascinating. There's so much goes on that, you know, you just take for granted as a fan, or things you don't even think about. You know, when you're looking at football for the outside in, you know, there's loads that happens, and it's been a learning curve for me. It's taught me a lot about business as well. You know, it's taught me. You know, I'm involved in a business that delivers service, and the football piece, like you said earlier, Benjamin, it's entertainment business.
Mm.
We need to remember who we're entertaining. It's no us sitting with suits on in the director's box. It's the punters that are coming out, their wives and their kids and their grandkids. That's who we can serve. That's who we exist to serve. Yeah. And that's often forgotten about. You know, it's often forgotten about, which is unfortunate.
You played at quite a good level though, didn't you, back in the day?
No, quite, mate. No, I went down to Swindon Town. It was Glenn Hoddle just left and John Gorman took over. A guy called Adrian Ridderford had brought me down there. He's, I think, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Adrian Ridderford and John Trollope were in charge of Youth Academy. And down there, I didn't make it. I wasn't good enough. We're down there. They made the Premiership that year. They had Jan Agafjordtoft and John Munker.
Yeah.
Nicky Summerby, Paul Bowden, Branko Coyne, Laurie Sanchez, and the like. That was a really good team. They get relegated the following year. Steve McMahon took over. Steve McMahon's directive was that, I think actually English football might have changed at the time. I'd need to go and fact check this, but there was a thing about it was regionalisation of clubs. So you couldn't bring clubs in from out west. It wouldn't have affected me, but that would be a good excuse. If I kept that as a good excuse as well.
Do you mean to clip it and edit that back?
That's the shit hot. They couldn't wait to sign it. But No, it wouldn't have affected me because it's coming from Scotland and they had a couple of Scottish kids there at the time as well. But Steve McMahon had this thing about local focus and local growth, whereas Glenn Hoddle had a more holistic view. So he was wanting, he was basically trying to make Swindon something that, that was greater than a provincial club.
Right.
Which philosophy, the way he played and stuff. It was, that was a good experience. Ironically, Janaga Fjortoft was there and they sold him to, I think, Middlesbrough. And last week I was in Mouldy, sorry, last month I was in Mouldy for our Champions League game with the kids.
Mm.
And I actually met up with his kind of best mate, who is the director of Mouldy. So he tried to phone him for us, you know. And,
wow.
His father's in charge of Iceland. Benedict, his dad. So he's director of Mouldy. His dad's an Iceland manager, and the connection was short off. You know, it's mad.
That's so crazy.
I never made it, mate. I wish I had done it. I wish I'd stuck in. But what happened with me was, I'd bounced about some clubs, but it was never big clubs. No disrespect to Swindon or Queenie South or anything like that, but I'd bounced about and I wasn't good enough just to make it to that level.
Right.
And I gave in. So see, instead of, when I look at kids now, like I'm signing players for League 1 or League 2, the wages are not great, but they're playing professional football in front of 2,000 or 3,000 a week. I should have done that, mm-hmm. instead of giving in. But
right, okay.
my psyche, if you like, is, if I'm not going to be able to get what I want from it, I just turn my back on it and I'll focus. I've got a lot of drive and I'd rather focus that on something I know I can do well. But I wish, you know, in hindsight now, I'm 44 now, in hindsight I wish I'd just bounced about, even playing junior football or something. I wish I'd made a career for myself at that level, but I just packed it in. What I started doing quite early was a really good football network.
Right.
Through being involved in football and keeping my toe in it, and I started getting kids clubs. I'm saying okay. Kids, I was only 25 at the time, do you know what I mean? But I was getting people clubs that had been freed, so people might have been freed from Celtic, Rangers, Hearts or whatever.
Okay.
I put a few players down to Swindon Town because I kept in touch with Ross McLaren and a couple others down there, although Ross never kept in touch with me. but that was a gateway for me to put people down to Swindon, and I got because I know what the rejection's like.
Yeah,
it was easy for me to give that advice.
Yeah, of course.
To be freed, and it was almost like it was bittersweet. You know, it's like I know I wasn't good enough. You know, it's not because I had an injury. It's not because, you know, you get all these bad luck stories. I just wasn't good enough. That's, you know, what it boils down to. But I could take that experience and pass it to someone who is good enough and basically advise them not to give in, you know, and to keep doing it. You know, and I've got a lot of gripes with football as it stands today with the academy structures. Not so much ours, because we exist for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Celtic and Rangers and these big guys, they bring kids in and you know they're never going to get a pathway through to the top. And then they get released and they fall out of the game.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Massive abundance of talent that Scottish football could benefit from.
Yeah.
All these academies that we're missing out on. You know, and then 5 years down track, you get punters saying, Scottish football is shit, there's not enough. It's because we've just lost a generation of players.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the big guy brought them all in like a sausage factory and we've not progressed them. So we're losing all the talent. You know, and it's that for me is, I don't know how you address that. One of the ways could be reserve football. We don't have, we're starting to reintroduce it now, but a proper reserve league. Like, you know, when I was down south, when I was down to Swindon and it was in the trial stages,
yeah,
I was allowed to play reserve football, but you're playing against guys that are pros.
Yeah.
You know, and you play a bad pass and they tell you you've played a bad pass.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way to learn.
Absolutely, yeah, because, I mean, football is brutal, isn't it, realistically?
Yeah.
And but you need to learn that.
When you've got a senior guy telling you that you're a dumpling, you know, because of a pass that you've played, you don't do it again.
No, of course not.
if you're a kid playing under-18s football or under-21s or under-23s against under-18s, under-21s, 23s, you can only progress to the same level as what you're playing against or what you're playing with.
Absolutely, yeah.
If you're playing with a guy that's 33, 34-year-old that's been round the block and he's trying to get himself fit to get back in the team, he's got 15 years playing experience.
Mm-hmm.
that you can pass on and share with you, show you different techniques or, you know, different strategies or structures during the game that will help you develop your game.
Yeah, of course.
So there's probably so much that we can do that we don't do, up certainly in Scotland. I know we're going through a good spell just now. We were national team, are doing not too badly.
Well,
we,
yeah.
Well, you guys came to town. you showed us a different level again. But I think that there's certainly progression there, but we need to, how do we get to a Bellingham level? You know, how do we get to a Harry Kane level? You know, it's a bit up again.
Yeah, I think that's a totally different conversation though, isn't it, that one? Especially those two as examples.
At youth, doesn't it? It starts in that where that is, and I think England have done the same sort of thing as what you're saying, is getting that youth in, but then just not utilising it, and then they just go and then don't, and then they're playing sort of down in sort of local leagues. So I think it's definitely a problem.
Aye, it is, but it's how you fix that. It's above my pay grade.
I'd love to
sit in a committee that gave ideas in. You know, but it takes a lot of investment, it takes a lot of patience, and I think it takes somebody with the balls to turn around and say, hold on a minute, we can't afford to lose another generation.
Yeah.
So if it's mandatory that every club in football has got a reserve team, right away in Scotland you've got another 40 teams created. Mm-hmm. You get another 40 teams of 15 players potentially. It's a lot of players that are getting are getting football at a higher level than under 18s and 23s. So to me, it goes back to the common sense analogy. You know, like, it's like, just keep it simple. You know, don't confuse it.
But does that come with, you know, additional cost though as well to run a reserve team? Because, you know, finance is a big thing, of course, as well. So
that's why we don't have it up here. Mm. You know, it's a cost thing. But surely you go to the national game, then have to come up with the resources or the ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Or FIFA or UEFA have to come up with a way of doing it that it's, you know, that it's benefiting the game in general. Do you know, because it's a powerful, powerful sport. It connects so many people in so many different ways. Do you know, and but at the same time, for kids coming through, our job should be to make pathways for them. That's our role, you know, and at the same time as entertaining the fans that watch for first team football. If you've got an academy or you've got a youth system, it needs to be legitimate to the point that you can proof test it and say, well, come to us and you've got a better chance of getting a career in the game than there would be if you go to Celtic, Rangers or whoever. You know, and fortunately we can do that just now, but it's how do we make it better again with a limited resource. I mean, to contextualise that, our academy operate with a £300,000 budget.
Okay.
Mouldy was £2.5 million.
Wow.
I was sitting with a guy called Thomas Mort, who played for Mouldy, and he was assistant manager at Mouldy, and he's now in charge of the youths. And he was telling me that it's £2.5 million they spend on their academy set up and their infrastructure, and we've got £300,000.
Yeah. So wow.
Even in Scotland, I'm not going to name the teams, but I know one of the teams particularly, because I spoke to their director of football, and they're spending £1.6 million. Mm. They're nowhere near where we are. So that's down to the hard work of the guys that's in that system and what they're prepared to put into it.
Yeah, does that go for women's football as well? So if having a women's team, is that kind of a similar outlay and stuff?
Well, I see with the changing landscape of politics in Scotland, I could probably get a game for the women's team just now if I reinvent myself. I might identify as Geraldine today.
Hey, you might make it this time.
I've certainly got a physique for it.
So, Will, you're feeling brave already. He's just slagging the guests off. He's literally there.
We've got a women's team that's no part of the club directly. So the women's football team, it's our crest, our badge, our stadium that they use, but they're not part of that set-up as yet.
Okay.
And again, the resources... The golfing resources is massive. Bobby does a great job in charge of them, but in a sincere note, with the changing landscape of football and so on, that is an area that's the next big thing. You know, commercially, that'll either get to or surpass the male game. You know, at some point, because somebody will throw a lot of money into it, and like it or lump it, you get the people that cry out for, you know, the quality bit that they say didn't exist, you know. And it's quite, you kind of have to bear that in mind. It's a challenge, because you get that perception, you know, that if you ask Richard Keys,
yeah,
he's not a good reference point, you know. But the change of landscape from what it was to what it is and where it's going, it's going to demand a lot of money. It's going to demand a lot of infrastructure, a lot of commercial activity. We need to try and get in that bandwagon, and I think our women's team do really well. They, maybe not in terms of results, but we know the results aren't there yet, but they do well in terms of how they put it out there and the buy-in that they get for the community and the people that's involved. And it's actually quite enjoyable to go to watch. It's quite enjoyable, aye. And you guys won the Lions, won the, is it Europa? The
Euros.
Yeah. Won it, so, aye. You know, so the proof's in the pudding. If you stick at it and you invest in it, success is achievable, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, we had Steph Meek on about a couple of months ago now. So she runs our local team, Margate. She runs their women's team. She's their manager there. And chatting to her, and she gets really good buy-in from the sort of men's side of the club. It's all under sort of, you know, one roof, so to speak. And she gets really good backing. But money-wise, you know, they're not paid at her level yet. You know, I think it's next. If they get promoted, I think they get paid, if I remember rightly. So they kind of go into that sort of semi-pro status and bits and pieces like that. But the buy-in she gets and the support from the club and the community is just insane.
Aye.
You know, they get a couple of hundred going to their games.
Yeah. Well, we support it as a club, I believe, I need to double check this, but if you've got a season ticket, I think you can get access to the girls' games or the women's games.
Perfect. Okay.
I'm sure that's the kind of bridge. But the rest of it, we need to work harder, to work more closely with them. But it's because it's new, and because the club's going through a transition period as well, there's a bit of growth that's still to go, but it's something, it's essential that you have. You know, I've got a daughter, she's not into football, but if she was, having that outlet for her, I think it's only fair, reasonable, and necessary that she's got that, the same opportunities that my son's got.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
I'm happy the game's going that way, you know, but it's still quite a considerable way behind commercially, but I can see it catching up at some point, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, it's interesting, but aye.
Absolutely. Honestly, we've got so many questions. I don't know. I'll say, where do we start? But so, in terms of kind of the plans for this season and everything that you kind of implemented so far, you know, where do you see yourself? Obviously, I know we're going for promotion, etc. But the team generally, how do you see that evolving over the next couple of seasons?
I can't look that far ahead just now. We've got, because that would be dictated by budget.
Okay.
Well, what I can say is I'm looking at January to see how we can improve what we have in January.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also looking at June.
Already?
As well. Yeah, aye.
Okay.
As of the 1st of January, you can maybe get a player in a pre-contract.
Oh, of course, Bosman Laws, yeah, of course.
So that work needs done now. So I'm working on that with the manager and with Declan. And we've made contact with a number of players. Whether or not it comes to fruition is another thing, but we're working on that. On Monday and Tuesday next week, I'm in Lisbon for the transfer room. I've got a forum.
Okay.
And there's 165 club participating in that. So I've got meetings set up with Liverpool and Beerschot in Belgium and a few others to set up networks at a bigger level.
Oh, fantastic.
That's in Monday. But aye. So I think the plan would be get out of this league into the Championship. If we're at the Championship, we need to bring in several new additions.
Mm-hmm.
Who are either in the Premier League or in that gap. So Declan devised a new structure for scouting. They were classifying players as A+, A+, B+, B in these categories. And then we're basically tying in the divisions. So like A+ would be Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, whatever.
Yeah.
We'd be the bottom end of the SPL. B would be the top end of the Championship. B+ would be the bottom end, B-.
Okay.
So we can clearly identify what players we think can play at those levels. And what that does is it focuses your attention and your shortlist. So you start off with 100 players per position. And then it's okay, well, we've five scouts, watch this guy. And the average of the five scouts' reports give us A, B, C, D, E, or whatever, you know, and we can then focus and hone in on what level of player we want to try and capture. And hopefully that's a good method, methodology of working. So that's in place just now. As I say, we're watching 44, 47 games a week. And we're just filtering our way through those players to see if there's anyone that we've missed or anyone that we're not aware of. And that's going to be our short window for January and June. But
okay,
we might want the players, but they might want to come to us.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the flip side of it. So it's always like, maybe it's like getting to Harrods, you know, with a tenner.
The baskets there that you use are quite nice, though.
You can leave an empty bag.
Looks
good, you know,
for no substance. Exactly. You never know. You can always pull off find a bargain somewhere, I suppose, can't you? That's the thing.
So that's it. So that's where we're at. So January, I've already started working in January. We've got the manager's got three key targets he's identified. I've already made contact with the three of them.
Okay.
So we're going to see how that plays out. And then we've got a plan B for, you know, if those three can come or want to come or don't come, mm-hmm. we then know when to do next, but it's very, very specific targets.
Okay.
And then for June, that'll be a conversation that we have loosely.
Yeah.
But we'll start to firm up on that in January and hopefully we can get our ducks in a row. You said 2 years, if we get promoted from the Championship to the SPL, that's a game changer. You're then shopping. Mm-hmm. You can then go into Harrods with 20 quid.
Yeah, I suppose your plans, I guess, will change, you know, depending on where you are, obviously, in the league as well, I guess. That, you know, as you said, in terms of, like, your budgets and the commercial side of things, it changes it changes every plan, I suppose, does it?
It does. I think your Championship, although the quality is vastly different to yours down south, it's equally as difficult to get out of because you've got a team from the top end division, if you like, coming out, who have invested heavily.
Mm.
Normally, that's the case, and they fall into your league.
Yeah.
And then you've got other teams that have been in that league for a number of years that have spent good money and got good players and are tried and tested. And you're trying to break that. You're trying to break that kind of grasp they've got on what they need to do to survive or get promoted. So that'll be the challenge. And that's why it was important to us to get good players in 2 year contracts. So there's a commonality within the building. Players know each other, they know how they play, they know the systems, they know what the manager wants. And then you've got that consistency to take you into year one in the Championship if you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that
right.
hopefully that serves you well. Then you're adding quality to that again. And that's the quality that you're hoping springboards you into the SPL. So it's a hell of a plan, you know, but there's so many moving parts to it for it to work properly.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and every club's got the same ideas and objectives. You know, so it's
just executing that better than them, I suppose, and you know, having the players just play out their skin to just sort you up the league, I suppose.
It becomes a lottery because it's the thing about the beauty of football is it's 11 against 11 in a flat surface for the same period of time.
Yeah.
When if you turn up week in, week out, you do better than the guys that don't.
Yeah.
But they need to buy into the manager's vision, which our guys thankfully do. So hopefully we keep our manager for as long as we can, and hopefully, you know, our players kind of turn it on. But that's the plan for going forward anyway. And again, to bring more into the club, we're hoping that the kids coming through, we'll get a few special talents that we can maybe move on, give them a career in the game, and make some money off them that will be reinvested back into the playing squad.
Yeah,
you know, so
that makes sense. Perfect.
Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. and so just to sort of finish off, you've got your own business you've spoken about. Is that football related, or is that kind of separate?
No, well, that's a good question. In very kind of broad layman's terms, my business started off with selling a photocopy, a resale company, and we serviced. That's what it was
in
2013 when it was set up. So we basically sold printers and photocopiers, and we serviced them, and we made a few quid from it, and had Orate Lifestyles. You know, that was the plan. I then bought that business in 2017. I had a serious illness, I got the last rights, and when I was in hospital, when I kind of realised that I made an arse of it. So if I died, my wife and my kids would have got 30% of what the owners wanted to give them because of how it was structured. Don't get me wrong, but the guys is in business, we were good guys, but they're businessmen first and foremost, so they would have given my family what my family was entitled to, and I don't imagine they'd have given them much more, because one of them was a Scots guy and he was quite tight. So when I started to recover, it became incumbent on me to try and buy the business. So I bought the company from them. Didn't have a clue what I was doing, you know, like, genuinely. You know,
I'm sensing a theme here, Jerry. Every job you're having now. I'm just like, I'll do it.
I was in it from its inception, you know, 2000. My company's 10 years old on the 16th of December this year. And I've been in it from day one. But I went from having the security of a guy, Dave McCartney, who was my boss for a number of years, and he's a great guy. I had the security of having Dave in the company, who, Dave's one of the guys that you go, okay, he's got it. You know, he's your Pepe, the photocopy world, you know. Like, he knows what he's doing. And you go through having that security and that peace of mind to doing it yourself. Right, and it's like, shit, how does that work? How does this work? Because although Dave's really good at what he does, he wasn't really too keen to share with me a knowledge and how to run a business.
Right.
So although I was a director of the place, and although I worked reasonably close to him, you know, I couldn't tell you about corporation tax, about VAT returns, about payroll, about all this stuff that you need to know. I didn't have a clue. And Dave never educated me in that. It's not his job to actually have asked questions. He probably didn't have the time to give me answers. But anyway, so I found myself in this situation that I spent $200,000 or whatever it was in buying a company. And I need to start swimming here because I don't know what to do. So as time went on, you know, I managed to kind of, well, we're still here, obviously, so I'm doing all right. But what happened was, you know, I started to kind of find my feet and get more familiar with things and put my own stamp on it. And then COVID kicked in. COVID kicked in, and overnight I could have lost my business because my revenue went from high five figures to £473. I've still got my invoice from April 2020. So I billed to my customer base £473. In April 2020, because everywhere closed down. So I remember sitting thinking, wow, I've promised all my staff to keep their jobs, you know, and I don't know how I'm going to. I had money in the bank, but I didn't have enough money to keep it going for a period of time that was indefinite. I had to change things, and I moved into different commodities with the same customer base. So what I'd identified was, all right, I've got paying customers who are good paying customers. They all pay me on time. They're all happy with the service we deliver. So what other services can I provide to that base immediately that they need, that I can deliver, that will give me a revenue stream that I don't have? So HR was one. Human resources, IT and comms, because everyone's working from home. Property services, and that was people refitting out their offices because of COVID, putting these Perspex panels up and things, and other people were closing offices down or remodifying. So that was an option. So what then happened was I started selling all this stuff through my business into all these customers, and then it grew, you know, into other areas. And then when we came back from lockdown, lockdown was 6 months after years, I think, but when we came back from that, it was like, this just isn't right. The balance wasn't right. So I then had to break that up into a group of companies. You know, so it's like property services does this, HR does HR, IT and comms this. And so I then had to break that up into a group. And then the football thing came along. So the group got put on the shelf, you know. The sports management was in that as well, because I was working as an agent. I was I was a registered intermediary with the English FA, as well. So that was the sports management piece. I had some players that I was looking after and stuff. But so that was the sports management consultancy. So they've got this group of businesses under under my business, but that then gets shelved when Hamilton came along, because I tried to buy the club in 2021. Sorry, 2022, I tried to buy the club. And I shelved my focus, if you like, my focus and attention. To pursue the football thing. So that's, and that, now I'm kind of getting back into it a bit more. I'm trying to find the right staff to take us forward, because the education that I've got for the football piece will help me massively with the growth of my own business.
Yeah, you know, I suppose the network you're obviously building as well for the football side, yeah, that sports management side is going to be, you know, invaluable, isn't it?
I think one of my problems was I never monetized what I had. There's never been about money for me, so it's always been about people, and that's a feeling in my part, you know, because if I applied a monetary value to everything, I'd be a lot financially a lot more wealthy than I am now, you know. But I've always done something because I've wanted to do it, and I've wanted the outcome to be right. So like for people, for example, I get more reward and fulfillment for seeing someone's growth. You know, because that's, you can't put a price in that though.
No, 100%.
Right. I agree. So I got a lot more reward from that than somebody gave me a bonus for doing it. It's like, it's a bonus, big deal, you know, but yeah. That guy's now this for the rest of his life, and I've played a part in it.
Absolutely. So
that for me is kind of, that for me is what, hopefully that changes, because I need money.
I think that comes with the right people, you know, the money will generally follow, won't it? Yeah, you know, because the right people in the right places are performing up to, you know, that elite kind of level for you, because they you know, they work for you, they're bought into you or bought into their line manager or whoever it is.
I believe that. I mean, when I worked as a sales guy in this industry that I'm in, again, it was that I was never focused on money. I just wanted to be the best. And ironically, when you're number one, you get paid number one wages.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a bit that's the lesson that I never learned when I was doing it was, I should have focused more on the money and I'd have done things differently. Whereas, you know, if I had it, everyone had it, you know, take my family on nice holidays, or I'd make sure my mates are okay and stuff, because the money's never my driver. It's, you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
You know, but now I've got two kids, so that's my priority, is to make sure they're left, you know, what I can leave them so they can go and enjoy their lives. So but I need to make a few changes to me first.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, well, you never know. No, you never know what's going to happen. No. I've got a good insurance policy, so if anything happens.
Your wife's listening to this going,
just now.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Jerry, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. Obviously, I appreciate we've kept you far longer than we even planned, but it's been honestly a fantastic conversation. I'm sure the listeners out there are absolutely loving this as well. So this will come out on Friday, so obviously we'll share it with you as well, and I'm sure the listeners will love it. A few listeners out there, if you can give us a like, give us a share, give us a comment, let us know your thoughts. But from us, thank you again, and speak to you soon.
Take care, lads.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please give us 5-star on your podcast provider, whatever one that may be, and help us #DropThePod.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
World class. Only football can make you feel like this.